I don't know how big vaping is in Australia, Jack, but listen, fam. Ever since that video went viral where the dudes were like testing out the elf
bars, the elf bars, bro. The elf bars.
This is important, right? We all know how popular these disposable vaping devices are in America, right? I go to the gas station a lot. I go to smoke shops a lot, right? Every, like, 3 to 6 months, there is some new, like, disposable vaping device that doesn't just, like, come out on the market to compete with the already established disposable vaping device. It's there to replace it. So, here, by banning Juul, but basically regulating them so hard, we've, assuming Juul isn't using Chinese chemicals themselves, we have effectively, like, just opened a whole new wave of, like, disposable vaping from
Can we talk about Delta 8?
Hold on, just one sec. We'll get to that in a minute. Yeah. But let me just introduce this real quick. So when Juul got heavily regulated because people were, like, really sick of these douchebag kids always fucking smoking that shit and then getting popcorn lung or whatever the fuck.
I was in America when that happened, when they banned it. Yeah. And when they made the consumption of tobacco 21, I was there as well.
They've basically made everything 21, right? And then on top of that, most Juul flavors outside of, like, menthol and what, Virginia tobacco, are gone. Out the window. Okay, so, and now you go to a lot of gas stations here in the U.S. They'll have a sign that says ID required for every Juul purchase. Right now, when Juul was gone, this thing called Vapo came. It was a disposable vape. They sucked, and then within 3 to 4 months they were replaced by this thing called Puff Bar. And then Puff Bar ran its course for about a year. And they were, like, all the rage for a bit. And then these things, like, I don't know what... What are the ones that are, like, cylindrical called? Do you know? Does anyone know?
Fumes?
Maybe. The cylindrical ones came along. And then the Elf Bar is now, like, the big dog in the disposable vaping market. Now, here's the shit, right? As if, you know, Chinese chemicals weren't already booming because of vaping and whatnot. With all these new disposable vapes on the market, I'd assume, and I'd assume correctly, that their profit margin and how much money they're making and how much they're selling has increased like tenfold. So my main point in this whole thing is basically China owns our nicotine market in a way.
That's lit.
So I have a Medium article that I was just showing that it says, myth, vaping is bad for the environment. And then it says, fact, every year humans litter the earth with more than 4.5 trillion cigarette butts. And so it's clearly something that's, like, paid for. Like, this is a paid-for article, right?
Is vaping bad for the environment? I actually don't know.
This right here, this picture that I have up right now, this is from a paper. It's called Research Gaps Related to the Environmental Impacts of Electronic Cigarettes. It's basically, there's not enough research, but, it, you know, if you look at this, what we're also not thinking about is the manufacturing of these things. Philip Morris also pours a ton of chemicals into cigarettes as well, so who knows how much that is.
Here's the other aspect. If we want to talk about littered cigarette butts, if you walk past any college campus in the U.S., you will see disposable vapes all over the fucking floor.
Yeah, it's awful, right?
Do they really just throw them on the ground?
Like, why are you going to find a trash can? You don't need it anymore. Fuck it.
Yeah,
throw it
on the ground. That's the problem with disposables, right? Is that, I mean, you know, if you're a heavy vapor, you can go through them pretty fucking frequently, and that's a lot of waste, right? But more so than just that, right? Like, you know, just the fact that they're being produced so fucking much really is definitely not.
Well, the other thing too, the whole banning the flavor shit, like, if you look at these disposable vaping devices, they've got like fucking 40 different flavors. Like, it's like, okay, you can't get a Juul with mango now, but you can go get your, like, strawberry mint cockfuck breeze from, like, on the Elf Bar.
Here's the one that's very popular in Australia, and look how many bloody flavors there are. It's wild.
How about you? How much is... Oh, damn, $32 for the disposable?
By the way, that looks exactly like an Alf bar, which is like the big man.
It doesn't look exactly like one, but it has a similar profile.
So it's $30 Australian, which is like 20 American, whatever metric of measurement puff is.
Awesome. Nice. There's not enough research on any
of
this. And the chemicals
fact.
Are always updating, right? So you're always looking at new chemicals in these things. How the fuck do you regulate that?
No, you don't, because there's no regulation for it. Just the
nicotine ones are illegal here.
Do you know what Delta 8 is, Jack?
Yeah, I do. That was around back in 2019. My friend that I met in America was talking about it.
A lot of gummies are Delta 8 and stuff.
See, the thing is, right, like that, like, because there's like, and I know it's ironic, but like, because there's no regulation on it, the way that people are manufacturing, like, or, okay, because, you know, what Delta 8 is just a synthetically processed hemp, like synthetically processed hemp, right? Mm. That's, you know, supposed to extract Delta 8 cannabinoids from that hemp. Right, and make it a psychoactive, substance, right? Because hemp normally isn't psychoactive, right? But it does have Delta 8 cannabinoids. The cutting process, I'm not too familiar with how it works, right? But like a lot of times, like people they're just done fucking awfully, right? And they're like, there's like heavy metal contamination and shit, right? And because there's no regulation, you know, these fucking cheap ass Delta 8 disposables are being sold for like $20, $15-$20, and God knows what they're cut with, because, you know, there's like no fucking, you know, regulation to mandate that they adhere to some sort of like, you know, manufacturing standard, right?
Heavy metals are a serious thing too. Like heavy metals are probably one of the more toxic things that you can get.
Yep. It's fucked. But again, this is what happens when, you know, the federal government pussyfoots and refuses to legalize marijuana like it should have done 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
Now we have this illicit gray market,
which is technically legal. What's the best way to control drugs? Produce them yourself in country.
Yeah, quite literally. Because, I mean, all right, the fucking myth of, you know, the war on drugs ever being effective at all, right?
Whatever that means, whatever metric of measurement puff is.
Awesome.
Nice.
There's not enough research on any
of this, and the chemicals
are always updating, right? So you're always looking at new chemicals in these things. How the fuck do you regulate that?
No, you don't, because there's no regulation for it. Just like, well,
the nicotine ones are illegal here.
Do you know what Delta 8 is, Jack?
Yeah, I do. That was around back in 2019. My friend that I met in America was talking about it.
A lot of gummies are Delta 8 and stuff.
The thing is, right, like that, like, because there's like, and I know it's ironic, but like, because there's no regulation on it, you know, the way that people are manufacturing, like, or, okay, because, you know, what Delta 8 is just a synthetically processed hemp, like synthetically processed hemp, right?
Mm.
That's, you know, supposed to extract Delta 8 cannabinoids from that hemp. Right, and make it a psychoactive substance, right? Because hemp normally isn't psychoactive, right? But it does have Delta 8 cannabinoids. The cutting process, I'm not too familiar with how it works, right? But like a lot of times, like people they're just done fucking awfully, right? And they're like, there's like heavy metal contamination and shit, right? And because there's no regulation, you know, these fucking cheap ass Delta 8 disposables are being sold for like $20, $15-$20, and God knows what they're cut with, because, you know, there's like no fucking, you know, regulation to mandate that they adhere to some sort of like, you know, manufacturing standard, right?
Heavy metals are probably one of the more toxic things that you can get.
Yep. It's fucked. But again, this is what happens when, you know, the federal government pussyfoots and refuses to legalize marijuana like it should have done 20 years ago.
Now we
have this illicit gray market.
What's the best way to control drugs? Produce them yourself in country.
Yeah, quite literally. Because, I mean, all right, the fucking myth of, you know, the war on drugs ever being effective at all, right? Like, it's outrageous, you know, because God knows how many fucking people we killed.
The undisputed champ of the war on drugs.
Well, what if the war on drugs is just a front to take drugs off the street and give it to the Contras to buy missiles for Iran or whatever happened?
Who knows? It's not like the CIA like purposely like started a crack cocaine epidemic here in America or anything. They would never do anything like that. Never.
Men and women of the CIA, you should not tarnish their reputation like that.
Isn't it so funny?
No, that's like how, my like, life's work is tarnishing the CIA.
Listen, dude, like I think it's so funny how like neoliberalism has like just taken such hold on like our fucking intelligence community, right? Because like now they're like talking about how like they want to be so progressive and like, you know, like liberal.
Because that's the main problem with the CIA is that they're typecasted and we're producing the same type of agent over and over and over again. You have nobody who thinks outside the box. We need the William Dafoe guy from Boondock Saints in there, you know. You need one fruitcake in the mix. You need an outside the box thinker, because the CIA, they're just not good at thinking in other people's minds, because they're all in their own fucking information.
They're definitely stuck in bureaucratic loops, right? But at the same time, though, I feel like when they do get, you know, bright people, the damage is fucked. And this is, but like what throws me off is like how could you possibly feel comfortable with going to like work for the CIA in this day and age, especially if you're, you know, let's say LGBTQ, right? Or especially if you're like a minority, right? Like when it's very obvious, like, that, you know, this fucking government agency has been responsible for some heinous shit against not only like you, but like everybody.
And then, but now, right?
The thing, though, that's like how fucked liberalism is, you know?
Is it possible that they're NPCs?
Maybe they can change. Maybe this time it'll be different.
Like, that's my
maybe I can fix it from the inside.
Yeah,
I think that's more the mentality.
No way. Nobody gets to the CIA thinking they're going to fix it from the inside. You join the NSA if that's you.
What's all right, listen, and honestly, the CIA is functioning exactly as it's intended to. So there's no reason to fix it. That's just the way it works. There is no fixing it. If you were to change the, like, you know, the protocols of the CIA, it would cease to be as effective as it is. Right, there's a reason why it's fucked. It's because it's intended to be fucked. It's an intelligence agency.
All right,
for like the world's hegemon.
Before I got up into, because I really needed chapstick, I heard you combine two words together that I just cannot tolerate on this show. Okay, even on filler episodes, that was the word CIA and functional. All right, you just can't be saying shit like that.
That's the thing, though. That all right, the CIA is definitely plagued with a lot of incompetence because of how bureaucratic it is, but like when it has its shit together, it can be pretty fucking frightening, right?
Yeah, the issue, so a lot of the stuff that was going on back in the day is the issue is that they were buying into pseudoscience and shit like that. They were trying to be scientists,
get mind
while they're fucking gym bros.
It was ridiculous.
And like, if you look, like, because people, like, whenever we, because we release these documents all the time, and like, there was one about like, something like incorporeal states or something, like you can warp through yourself, or really dumb shit, astral projection or something like that. And people were like, "See, there's a CIA project on it." And I was like, "Yeah, dude." They also had one where they had people stare at goats and tried to kill them. Like, so. At the same time, where you have really, really in between really atrocious shit, you have really, really, really stupid, stupid things that you're like, why are we wasting money on this? So it fucks you on both ends. So it's like,
are you talking about the entire government or just the CIA?
Just the CIA right now. So, but the torture, you know, like that's another thing where it's like, it's an atrocity. And then right before that, 9/11 is also their fault. So like, And it is because of the bureaucracy. That's why 9/11 happened, because they were afraid of giving other people clearance because they didn't want to know that they were training. So One of these days, I'll keep that in there. I'll just forget to cut it out.
One day.
There's not a single person in the world who could make this pencil. The wood from which it's made, for all I know, comes from a tree that was cut down in the state of Washington. To cut down that tree, it took a saw. To make the saw, it took steel. This black center, compressed graphite, I think it comes from some mines in South America. This red top up here, the eraser, bit of rubber, probably comes from Malaya, where the rubber tree isn't even native. Literally thousands of people cooperated to make this pencil. People who don't speak the same language, who practice different religions. When you go down to the store and buy this pencil, you are in effect trading a few minutes of your time for a few seconds of the time of all those thousands of people.
I think that, remember, we should be striving for a more ideal society, and there's probably no better chance for that in places that have been destabilized, like as we've seen through, like, you know, Rojava, right? You know, I don't think we should be using liberal democracy as like the standard.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, again, that, you know, decentralization is definitely the solution here. So that way, you know.
And that's kind of what we're about, is decentralization.
Yeah.
Because,
fuck Rainer. It's like,
yeah.
I mean, well, look at what liberal democracy has done so far. Look where we are.
That's why I said we have 8 years left, because when climate change starts destabilizing these regions in Africa, ISIS is coming for us.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
They're coming to us.
I mean, I think it's more than just worrying about, you know, massive ideological change. I think it's just the fact that, like, because of how capitalism functions, right? When things start to fall apart very quickly. Okay, so like this wouldn't have been such a problem if we were talking maybe 50, 60 years ago, right? But like now, like with how like dependent everything is and how efficient things are, and how, I mean, because like, all right, let's think about like what happened during 2020, right? With you know, the supply chain just completely shitting itself.
Yeah.
Right. Imagine that happening like at like a much higher scale. Mm. You know, because instead of just a pandemic, you know, there's just mass agricultural failure, and people are dying of starvation.
The like the mainstream's idea of anarchy, if you want to say that.
Yeah.
Like, the news will be like, it's anarchy. That'll
Africa
be all the media
channels.
Anarchy,
what's fascinating is, right, like that this is I don't want to deviate too far. But like this mode of thinking is like, I don't know how familiar you guys are with accelerationism.
No. That's one of the things that go into the stuff that we do. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
We look at accelerationism a lot.
I'm a left wing accelerationist.
Terrible ideology.
See, that's the thing, though, right? That like.
What's funny is, so Jack and I, the way we, so we were both equally as anti-fascist, but we disagree on everything politically, and that's why we came together to make this.
Interesting. So why do you, I mean, what are your reservations? Well, obviously, like, that's kind of a fucking weird question, right? But like, why do you feel that like leftist accelerationism is?
Well, first and foremost, you're not going to create your ideal world from the ashes.
Yeah. No, so first of all, we need to be looking at decentralized and anarchist systems in Africa. Mm-hmm. We don't need to be looking at them here. We need to start building local supply chains up in Africa. We need to start looking at self-organizing in Africa, and it's not going to be done through democracy because of the tribalism there. It's just not going to happen. We need to go in there. We need to politically educate people. We need to teach them how to do crisis staging. We need to teach them how to be civil engineers. And these types of things of decentralized systems, power will eventually consolidate in most places. But that's fine, because it will consolidate with words instead of bullets.
My reservation with this is that it assumes that, one, we would be able to do this without state interference.
And that is a valid criticism, right? That is a valid concern, is that the global north will interfere. However, I don't think that if we get in there fast enough and under the radar, right, theoretically, I feel like we could get it established to a point where that's not going to be an issue.
Yeah, I mean, they're not doing anything about ISIS, who's doing it right now. So,
exactly.
So that's why we need to be looking at the internationalists that have already been trained in Rojava to start expanding into Africa and taking the model into Africa.
I mean, I agree with you. I think that internationalism is has been incredibly useful for Rojava, right? But I mean, again, my concern is that, like, all right, so I think that to neglect the fact that Rojava exists in the way it does, we need to acknowledge that it's because of the U.S. I know that the American government definitely doesn't care much about public opinion, but there was just a point where they just were not able to commit more, like, troops on the ground in another theater in the Middle East. And so they looked to their options, you know, just like they always do when it comes to fucking proxy wars, right? And they're like, okay, which groups can we fund to do our dirty work against, you know, ISIS, right? Which, ironically, I'm sure we all know is the fucking result of decades of American fucking funding.
Yeah, well, all of that's true, but the way the relationship formed is important here, because it gives you a deeper understanding of the situation. And the Americans didn't get involved until the Yazidi genocide happened. Mm-hmm. So an active genocide was going on, and the PKK was in there before the Americans evacuating people. That's why they came together and started working together, is because of that. Because they were
When was that?
That was the Sanjir massacre.
That was 2015.
The YPJ was there. The YPG was there.
That was 2014 where they saved the 10,000.
So Yazidis. That's where the relationship really starts. But they were holding Kobani regardless. Kobani wasn't going to fall. We just came in and helped them break the siege that was on the city. And like Raqqa, they took that shit almost entirely by themselves. And it's like the funding that they do get, yeah, sure, they do get funding and things like that, but you have to understand that the revolution existed far before ISIS came. Mm-hmm. 10,000 people died for that revolution just because of ISIS alone. So it existed before them. And ISIS was, in turn, also created by the U.S. So yes, in a way, they are there because of the United States, but it's a deeper relationship than...
But
more nuanced.
When I say this, I'm also speaking more like in a macro sense, like geopolitically, right? Like because while I agree that my position is that like Rojava is only possible when I say Rojava, I mean like significant social revolution like this is only possible when the state fails. You know.
Yes. No, and that's the point. And that's
but why it's also
that's the thing is the states are going to fail on their own. We shouldn't be accelerating them. So Egypt will do it. Uganda will do it. Nigeria will do it. There's certain states that are definitely going to allow this to happen, where we can go in and we can establish refugee camps, and we can train refugees on the ground, not in warfare, but in civil engineering. So they can go back into these unstable regions and establish a revolutionary government the same way that they did in Rojava, because that's what happened in Rojava, is that it was people coming together because it was unstable. They weren't taking advantage of the situation. It was a circumstance that happened upon them. And they said, to fight this, we need to self-organize. And they did.
I mean, I I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying, but I also feel that because the U.S. was there, right, Turkey didn't have the opportunity to fucking shit on Rojava as quickly as they would have had the
absolutely.
U.S.
No, 100%. But Russia is also a factor there.
No, I agree. Russia definitely, especially after it was 2019, right, when Trump pulled us out of...
But most people are going to have upper state protection. There's very few people out there where somebody's not going to intervene and say, like, yo, you need to fuck off. You know, like, we're trading with this person. You need to get the fuck out of here. Like, it's going to happen. And also, to bring it back to what we were talking about earlier, with the Azerbaijan and Armenia war, that's directly connected with this, too. That's Russia and Turkey as well. The thing is, everyone wants to look at it where it's, like, America bad. And it's, like, America
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Like, wholeheartedly. Like, my position isn't to just blatantly... you know, just exclusively blame America. My criticism is directed towards, you know, every state that's actively involved. Obviously states in general, right?
But then like, also they do, states involved in, like, of that, you know, Russia did end the conflict.
What, in Artsakh?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
So it's like they're sitting here doing genocide over here, but if we didn't have them there, that conflict may
but
not
have
ended. But
the thing is, though, right? Like,
and right now with Turkey, they might have been able to invade if we didn't have Russia there. But it's a weird... it's a weird thing that you have to look at these state actors where it's like you need them in certain places, and at the same time they're doing fucking war crimes
elsewhere. Yeah, that's why Turkey's in NATO. We know they're a fucking genocidal state. We know they're
we know that they created ISIS for the last
100 years. We know that they're actively, if not, you know, at least buying oil from ISIS, right? Or were. Right.
Oh, they're doing more than that.
You know, ISIS is an extension of Turkey, right? They're quite literally funding and you know, sending off jihadists in northern Syria to rape and genocide Kurds in Afrin and in other parts of Rojava, right? They're geopolitically useful because they also kind of hate Russia.
So the biggest thing is the trade routes coming out of the Black Sea.
Yep. It all comes back to the, you know, to the money, to the capital.
We are creating a general profile of what civil Zapatistas could look like, taking the essentials of armed Zapatismo to recognize not taking power, not wanting to hold public office, and the struggle continues for democracy, freedom, and justice, and demanding that the government place itself at the service of society, to change the relationship in Mexican society between rulers and the ruled.
That's why I feel the way I do about Ukraine, is that unfortunately I think that it's just so meaningless because...
Of course it is, but no. But think about why Russia is pushing into Ukraine.
Russia knows that they're not going to take Ukraine. Come on.
No, they're never going.
Come on. You don't think they were aware how many people were going to die in this war? They don't care.
They knew exactly
what was going to happen.
I don't think Putin calculated Finland joining NATO.
I don't think anyone did.
No, and I have a Finnish friend that I've been talking to about this, and she said everyone in Finland was like, what the fuck is happening? But this is me fucking praising a government fucking
Finland has been doing some pretty cool shit though. Like, she's not fucking around.
No,
like,
she's not, and I think she's doing really well, which is why I think it's funny that all the media is talking about, oh my god, she's a real person.
Yeah.
Who gives a fuck? Look at what she's doing.
But it's like, I feel the same way about Ghana. I mean, like, it's like, Ghana, I'll definitely say, is like, it's a great country. They're doing good things for their people in Ghana. Ghana is one of the few governments that I would say is a good government. And that's also grading on a scale, because it's also, you have to, you know, it's Africa. We know how hard it is to fucking make a stable state in Africa.
Yeah, it's all interconnected, and Ukraine is way deeper than people think it is.
Oh, no,
it's
absolutely.
And when people are like, oh,
it's just what makes it so
US-backed coup in 2014. Shut the fuck up.
It makes it so tragic.
Just stop. You have no idea what you're talking about. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things.
What's terrifying is that Ukraine is only a preview, realistically.
Of course it is. It's a
testing
ground.
Syria was a preview for Ukraine. And that's one of the things that that really got Russia to lose a lot more money than it was expecting, is because all these weapons that it was testing out on Syria, they were testing out on people who couldn't fire back, mostly civilians, you know? And then they went and they tried to do it in Ukraine, and they were, like, using low-flying planes and, like, getting their shit fucked.
Yeah, I mean, but the reason I say that is because... I mean, we look at the war in Ukraine and see how fucking devastating it's been, and how just absurdly, like, brutal it's been in such a short period of time.
It's right? No different to any other war. It's just televised.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's so crazy.
Dying, a lot of people dying.
That's so crazy that and I talk about this on my Instagram and Twitter.
It's a pretty serious war just on the death count,
right? You know. That you know, that we can just casually witness this, like, it's just there for us to see, and like even on the mainstream, like, people can just you know,
I mean, it's you have, like
that like, the,
like that for a while. I mean,
yeah, but
since Vietnam, really,
Nagorno-Karabakh, that was really like the first one where
it
really,
yeah, but it wasn't like this, because the thing about Karabakh is that, you know, it was like one of the, you know, secondary, like, the war of secondary concern for, like, the West,
well,
right? You know, it's just another ethnic conflict in some backwards part
of
the world,
the
right?
Coming out of there.
You know, but Ukraine is serious. Why? Because it's in Europe.
That's mostly why people care. Let's be real.
But again,
well,
my point. Wait,
it's
just real quick.
It's Russia as well.
Yeah.
It would be a big deal if the U.S. was invading somebody too, and it was.
Yeah, but. My point is, strictly, is that while like, it's been fucking horrendous so far, it can only get worse, because God help us if something happens, and art, and by art I mean like the West's involvement, like, expands to something greater. Like, we actually get involved in belligerency, and then, you know, from there it's a really big fucking slippery slope, because we could quite literally end up with World War III, which could end a litany of different ways, but I think the most terrifying of which
is Armageddon. Why not accelerate it?
No.
See?
World War III won't happen.
Yeah,
I don't think so either.
I have to agree with John. World War III is nowhere near.
I don't think it's happening.
You have no clue how much people on Instagram piss me off anytime there's like an update in Ukraine.
Like, why? What would be the point to break the nuclear taboo on Kyiv? Like,
there's no point.
It would fuck them so hard. Like,
well, that's the thing.
We wouldn't need to respond. We wouldn't need to respond with nuclear weapons if they did that. They would fuck themselves. Like, that's how you lose a war.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a hot take, right? That I think that if the Kremlin decided to drop some sort of a nuclear weapon in Ukraine, that the West probably wouldn't do anything.
Like, no, they won't, because they don't need
China.
To.
China wouldn't even work with them if that happened.
No, they wouldn't. They would be isolated entirely on the world stage. Yeah. Nobody, not even Iran, not China, nobody would work with them ever.
But it would also break the.
But that's the thing,
taboo.
Though. That then mad is bullshit.
Hmm.
Then you know, the entire like concept of nuclear deterrence.
Yes.
Gets fucking eradicated.
Yeah.
At that
yeah.
Point.
No.
100%.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Uh huh.
So
it's a lie. It was a nuclear arms race. That's all it was. It was a capitalistic venture for the US and Russia to make as much fucking money off scaring people as possible. And it's been the model for 80 years.
Drops like a fucking low yield nuclear bomb.
You need a specific target.
He will get assassinated. He will get killed by his own people.
You need a specific target for nuclear weapons.
You think so?
And we've only seen a few potential scenarios where it would work out. But like, you need to make sure there's no civilians for miles when you use nuclear arms. We've talked about Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur. People firmly believe Israel almost used a nuke on Egypt during that war. If Syria didn't fuck up as hard as they did, they probably would have used one. And so in China, when China invades, that's where we're most likely to see a nuclear scenario, because it's going to be a naval battle. And that's where nukes are good, is at sea. There's no civilians around, and you can just use them to take out China's entire navy before they even try to do anything. No civilian casualties at all. Well, there'll probably be some fishermen, like always.
That's the thing, though, that whole possibility just scares the fuck out of me. And you know, we're closer to that being a real possibility than we have been. I would venture to say anytime during the Cold War, with the exception of maybe the Cuban Missile Crisis.
No, because the entire Cold War was a psyop to make money.
Well, the
there's
thing,
a hot the, take for you.
The thing is, because I've talked to a lot of people who know more about this than me, because Russia has like nerve agents. So we were talking about weaponizing, because I'm not sure if you know this, but General Armageddon, the general that Putin just brought in before he started using the loitering munitions, that guy, he is like directly linked to when Assad dropped sarin. He was on the airstrip where that sarin was loaded.
Holy fuck. Wait, when did they do that?
Khan Shehun, it was 2017. And Trump responded by sending a shitload of cruise missiles, as we should, whenever somebody uses sarin gas. But
I remember this.
Yeah. So this is what if we're talking about a weapon of mass destruction being used by Russia, I would say it's far more likely to see nerve agent than nuclear arm, because we know Russia has nerve agent and we know they have a lot of it because they've used it for plenty of assassinations, but we don't know how weaponized their nerve agent arsenal is.
Yeah. This is a way more likely scenario than nuclear weapons.
Nerve gas?
The chemical weapons in general.
Yeah, well, yeah, also for terrorism.
Yes, this is a way more likely scenario and way scarier
than
nukes.
This little film that's playing right now, if anyone hasn't heard of this, this is the whole reason why the nuclear arms race ended, is this movie. It scared people so much.
Oh, Threads. I want to watch this movie.
It scared people so much that we started disarming our nuclear bombs. But like, bro, I would so much rather go in a nuke than be hit with nerve agent.
Oh, 100%. Bring up that video you sent me showing the animals, the test, the sarin test. The
oh, US yeah, sarin I got a test. Hole. I got a hole. Mm. But the thing is that the artillery shells, even Saddam had those. And I could see that being, I could see some chemical shells being launched.
I mean, did he use those against the Kurds during the genocide?
Yes. He used, yeah. It was sarin gas provided by the UK.
Really?
No shit. Fucking hell.
Yes. Yeah, we talked about it with Ace on the arms race episode.
Fortified positions of this kind are so sturdy that anything less than direct hits with high explosive shells from medium artillery probably would fail to cause any casualties. None of the test animals were killed or even injured by blast or shell fragments. All the animals were killed by the toxic chemical within 4 minutes after the GB shells landed in the target area. It must be recognized, of course, that with troops occupying hard targets such as these, GB casualties would be minimized if the men were properly masked before the toxic cloud enveloped them.
Effective treatments against it, but you have to know it's coming. And we knew it was coming when it happened at Syria because they had, it basically, you'll see it, it looks like they're like using a hose, but one of the things you do is use water because it will help a little bit. It is a little water soluble, but it's not going to like save your life because if it's already absorbed into your system. But deadly nightshade reverses the effects of it. So as long as you have, and like in all first aid kits in the military, they have atropine in there. So the soldiers on the field who get hit with nerve agent, like they, if they knew it was coming, they would be able to reasonably react to it. But the thing is we don't know what happens when you like really survive those types of things. You know, the only time we've seen it is in Syria now, and we don't know the long-term effects. You know, we know a little bit because we poisoned our own people with nerve agent when we blew up Saddam's weapons because we didn't brief them on the weapons that they were blowing up, and that's been covered up. But that's minimal exposure. It wasn't direct exposure where they actually had to be like hospitalized.
$247 million, and your researchers have come up with the fact that there are symptoms. Hey, you could have saved a lot of money. Chris Hayes and I knew that there were symptoms. Mr. Bunk, are there symptoms? Yes. Mr. Robinson, are there symptoms?
Absolutely.
Good. We don't have to pay them $247 million. So what are we doing? I have concluded, and I don't mean this to be a mean statement to the members of the DOD, because I know in their hearts they certainly want all veterans to get a fair shake and to be well. But something very strange is going on. I do not know why, from day one, the DOD, to a lesser degree the VA, but both institutions have been resistant to the very serious crisis that we are facing and the pain that is going on.
Here's a conversation I was having with some friends of mine. If the Unabomber were to happen now, right, how much media attention do you think it would get? And do you think it would have nearly as much like impact on public consciousness?
Can I go?
Go ahead.
I think he'd be a local celebrity.
That's it?
I think he would be a celebrity. I think people would support him.
I think it'd have the same media attention, media coverage, but I think it'd have less impact on public consciousness. Definitely the same amount of media coverage, but I think people would treat it like something normal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's
what I mean by people would love it because it would be accepted almost.
Look at this most recent terrorist attack, which everyone is saying is a mass shooting. It was a terrorist attack at that gay club, right? Look at we're seeing literally people being like, well, maybe if they didn't molest kids, then it wouldn't be shot up. And it's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Did you see that one fucking evangelist? I can't speak English, pardon me.
But, you know, evangelist?
Evangelist.
Evangelist?
Yeah, and she was like, you know, I because they didn't accept Jesus Christ, they're, you know, condemned to eternal damnation.
Fuck those,
like,
people. Fuck those people.
It's Y'all Qaeda, dude.
those people can go fuck themselves. They're the worst. Fucking, oh, I hate them so much. Just religious fundamentalists.
Shootings and terrorism. as you can see, 3% of attacks it says possible terrorism, but most mass shootings are not terrorism.
This is actually a very important thing to bring up, because I was going to say this, but I'm glad you actually brought this up. Because, like, mass shootings are not necessarily terrorist attacks. It's all about motivation.
This is all in the 2019 terror index. So if you look here, it's saying, like, unaffiliated and affiliated. So when we're looking at separatist, far left, and environmental, it's normally affiliated with a group. But then far right and Islamist, it's more lone wolf.
I mean, we know what the reason is. No.
But there's also one where it tells you the breakdown of attacks.
And I think, I mean, and I know the answer. At least I know my answer, right? But, like, why do you think far-right extremists are, you know, they seem to have a higher propensity to, you know, commit terror, acts of terror?
Well, and that's the thing is like, that's the specific stat that I'm looking for. Because the thing is that the left commits way more terrorist attacks. But they're all Molotov cocktails. The right wing is they have less terrorist attacks, and we're just classifying it the way the government does here. But they kill more people from terrorism. Almost nobody dies from left wing terrorism.
Yeah, because left wing quote unquote terror is just property violence most of the time.
Yeah, and that's the thing is terrorism. It just has to be politically motivated, and it has to be against people or an economy.
So I've had a couple conversations with friends about basically how the right wing at this point is just like they in America, at least, right, is how they've basically become like the Republican Party and conservatives more broadly in the United States have basically just become like they just get mad at whatever they're told to get mad at next. So we're going to delve into some dumb culture war shit for just a minute here. I'm sorry.
Okay, let me set you up. Let me set you up real quick.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are all domestic terrorists. Please welcome.
What the fuck?
Did you not? Was that? That's not edited, is it?
No, it's not.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are all domestic terrorists.
I remember what I can vaguely remember that, but I can't remember why. It was like the media.
January 6th.
That's right. Yep. They were like, it was something specific. They were like all Trump supporters or something like that, and they're just
it was
like, CPAC. Fuck it.
CPAC is wild.
Didn't they bring the Hungarian leader to CPAC?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, Orban? Orban? Yeah, that shit was funny as
oh,
hell.
Oh, my God.
We were talking, me and my friends, we've been having a lot of discussions about basically how they become like, this party, they just get outraged at whatever Fox News tells them to get outraged next. So an example is like this Balenciaga thing. Now, whether or not you think the clothes that had those kids modeling in was like BDSM-esque, I don't know. I saw like a couple photos. Looks like Balenciaga
and
bullshit.
And also, it was just somebody that they hired to do a photo shoot. It was like at his discretion. It was an ad agency they hired. It's not like Balenciaga produces ads.
Right, yeah, no, they got better shit going on. But my point is, on the one hand, it is funny to laugh at what conservatives get outraged about. But if you look at it, they kind of use a lot of these things, especially like trans people as of late, as a bit of a scapegoat. So anytime, I don't know, it's like something comes up regarding trans people, they're very like they're full of vitriol when they talk about it, right? So it's like they're like they're
yeah, because
boomers,
they watch libs
they're
of TikTok
gonna
too much.
Finger bang your wife in the women's bathroom, yada yada yada. And for a lot of us, this is just like a funny haha conservatives being dumb entertainment, right?
I wouldn't say that. I think a lot of us are taking it very seriously.
A lot of us are taking it very seriously, especially after this nightclub shooting. But let me get to that. The thing is you are gonna have these like weirdos, these weird fuckers who are gonna take this to the T, and they're like, you know what, man, I gotta do something about this. And so now you have where was it? It was Colorado, right?
It was the only gay place in Colorado Springs.
Yeah, so you have this shooting in Colorado Springs, and I think it's a bit of a testament to just, it's like your words become actions type thing, where it's like you have a lot of these, the way they talk about trans people, the way they talk about LGBT people, it's like they're groomers, they're pedophiles, they're this, that, and the other. And it's like, when you break it down, it's like, it makes sense that this happened. I hate to say it, but it makes complete sense that this transpired the way it did because of the language that the conservative media has been using when it comes to LGBT issues. So when we're talking about the right wing embracing terrorism, I think we're going to see probably more shit like this, unfortunately, just because their pundits, their speakers are basically giving people a free pass to not only talk like this, but at the end of the day, they seem very unapologetic after what happened. And it's kind of funny to watch being like a Muslim Arab, because it's like after every terror attack, it seemed like our community was expected to like send out like these huge apologies for what some fucking psychos did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and now they're in the same adamantly, and they're almost embracing it. Like, you know, so, I mean, that's just what I have to say about that. And I'll add to what you're about to say. So go ahead.
Well, the thing is with me is just that I look at everything from an information warfare perspective, obviously. And if we look at Russia and we look at Russian homophobia, I think it would be pretty easy to have people use memetic warfare against the right wing in this country to arm them against trans. I think that some of it happens naturally because all of it is going to happen naturally. You're just going to have hateful people. But I think just because of the way Russia works that they are able to amplify it to a great deal. And that's one of the harms that we have, is that Russia is just constantly doing information attacks on the fringe of this country. And it's getting really bad. And in that thread that I just pulled up, one of the things that I said, that one of the main reasons that a lot of these people who are more linked to the network didn't get elected was because they were dumb enough to ban abortion. And that might be a silver lining in things. Mm-hmm. Fucking bad people. Because it only takes a small amount of fascism before your government starts going to shit. Like, if you look at the situation of Orban and how he came to power, it's literally because the left wing fucked up hard and they were caught lying on tape right before an election, and it swept the election. So like, it takes fucking up once right before an election before it sweeps. The Afghanistan withdrawal, for example, we should have at least renegotiated the Doha talks, right? We shouldn't have pulled out that year. We could have pulled out the next year. Still would have been a possible thing to do. It still would have been a shit show. But the American people want out of that war, and we are a democracy, and it needed to happen. But the thing is that couldn't happen, because then it would happen on the midterm year, and pulling out of Afghanistan on the midterm year would affect our politics more. So people had to die because of this type of shit that was going on here. Because of the polarization in this country, people in Afghanistan fucking died. They fell from airplanes to get out of that country.
That's the point. That's the point that really needs to be made here, is that that these people do not give a fuck. They will say they care, but they don't. They're all the same. Fuck these people. They're the worst. Like that is the real point, is that people died because of American politicking. That's the point.
And even the first Iraq war with Bush, that he didn't continue it because there was an election coming up, and he still lost. He should have just went all the way and took out Saddam then, and created a future problem for us, just like we did in Afghanistan this time.
Yeah. It's all very interesting, but it's definitely going to increase the amount of attacks like that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I always say I'm the minorities. I think people in America should utilize the Second Amendment to protect themselves.
Just imagine if that guy wasn't there to take down the
shit. Beat up the dude who shot up the club in Colorado. They like got him pretty good. They like beat the guy up who shot up the club in Colorado.
Yeah, well, it was the guy who took him down was a trained military.
Good, they should have broken all his bones. Christ.
That's one of the reasons why he was able to do it. He pulled his friend to the ground when he heard the gunshots going, and then charged the guy.
And the other thing I want to bring up about it is the guy's dad. I don't know if you ever saw the fucking interview with the guy's dad. Former Meth UFC head. Fighter. He's clearly in the interview. He's tripping out on crack or something.
Meth.
And the guy
he's actually on intervention, and he's the notorious, after injecting meth, Aaron masturbates for 10 hours.
And I mean, And I mean, the guy's very unapologetic. He doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, I mean, but you have to, and that's the thing is that this is a very American History X, because American History X is, there we go, this is what we should have been doing the whole time. But American History X is kind of lame in the regard where they frame it as how white supremacy is created, and it's not, it doesn't really work the way it shows it in American History X, but this time around, this is a very American History X scenario where it was, like, fostered in the home.
Yeah.
But the thing is that there was no reason for this attack to happen, and it happened because he had political connections to the Republican Party. I mean, he literally was threatening to blow up his house. It's a terrorist threat, and he was able to keep his guns.
That's lit, though.
What?
Buddy puts on a glow-in-the-dark mask and starts saying crazy shit.
But I mean, I think the fact that like America's like gun laws are just so fucking horrendously broken is a testament to like the American experience, right?
Yeah, well, and also the thing is that people, when the people who want gun control are only looking at one type of shooting.
Yeah.
And mass shootings are not the shootings we have to worry about. Mass shootings we can actually treat mimetically.
Yeah, we talk about this all the time. We have plans. Yeah. We're doing stuff about it. We will. I don't know how it's going to go, but it's going to be a good idea.
With Colorado or with Columbine, right? What did the police do there? They sat outside while people bled to death, right?
That's what they did at Uvalde.
And then that's what keeps happening. So if police actually just go in and shoot the person, mass shootings go way down, because mass shootings actually happen all the time, all over the world. Police just kill the person right away. Russia, walk in, kill the person.
Russia's different, though. They'll fucking send in people very quickly.
One beat cop took down the last mass shooter in Russia. Mm. He just took him down, he shot him a bunch of times in the legs.
We were talking about this with the that dorky looking kid that got domed by the fat guy in the shopping center. Right?
Yeah.
That situation happens more and mass shootings go down, because you don't want to get bodied by the fat kid.
You also have to prop them up. So there is a Texas yes. shooting where the guy shoots two people in a church with a shotgun, but two guys in the church draw guns on them and take them down before you can do more.
So it was like a 40-foot shot, like, and got him in the head, I think.
Yeah, and the nightclub is one of those things. It's going to be hard just because of the framing of the LGBT side of it. Mm. But if you just frame shit as like, you do a mass shooting, people are going to fucking kill you before you get a chance. And that's what you report on, instead of the death counts and how horrific shit is. And, you know, you don't want... It's all about how you report something that we're going to make a trend.
I'm very passionate about this. Like, since like, I think maybe 2015, I'm like, news needs to stop showing
their faces,
their
names. But this wasn't a mass shooting. This was a terrorist attack, so it's completely different.
Yes. But like in the context of that, regardless, it's like no faces, no names, no kill counts, no gun type, nothing. It's just people died, guy got bodied by fat kid, here's the kid who bodied him. That's all it needs to be. And also faces and names of all victims. No shooter name, no face, nothing. Nothing. They die in the dirt. Their name dies in the dirt. Nothing. Nobody knows who they are.
Well, the other thing too,
unless the guy gets away, then
That's a good thing too, because of the identity attacks, they all like to honor each other.
Mm. Yeah, especially the New Zealand shooter. The New Zealand shooter, you told me about that he was actually honoring someone else, which I didn't know about. I thought the New Zealand guy was like
he's not
the original one. I didn't know that. But the New Zealand one.
What do you mean he wasn't the new? Hold up. Explain that for me real quick.
Go on.
This is the guy right here.
Oh, Anders Breivik?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't he do a shooting and a bombing?
Yes. And he's about to be out of prison because they don't have life sentences in Norway.
What the fuck, Norway?
Yeah, he only got 21 years.
That's so fucking dumb. 21 years, but that shooting was like in 2011.
He killed 77 people.
Holy shit.
Injured 319. And he's the guy at the start of the chain that they all love to worship.
Hold on. Theoretically, right, porn is like blackballed on Twitter, but it's still allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, would that not be the situation here, and it would just turn into like some a discoverable like dark web sort of thing?
No.
Would it not be beneficial for researchers?
No, it's an information hazard. So you can access it if you're a researcher, yes. Though I can find, we can find that manifesto if we really wanted to look for it. But the thing is that that's not the point of it. It's the point of it is that you stumble across it. And that's the whole point with ISIS and how ISIS does their information warfare. So the Caliphate cache, I think it was on a, I think one of them was on a Justin Bieber fan account. And it was just a link to the fucking, it was just a link to like how to join ISIS.
What the fuck? Jesus Christ.
Imagine you're a 14-year-old kid and just trying to find a video, and then you get redirected to like ISIS's manifesto.
It's an ISIS cover of Baby by Justin Bieber.
Get it, boy, no, you can lick my poker face.
So listen, fellas, you're gonna take the flight to Istanbul. We're gonna have a guy pick you up. He's gonna take you to Gaziantep. The guy in Gaziantep is going to drive you into Syria, Iraq, right? He's going to drop you off to another guy. By the way, let me just add this this Justin Bieber music video at the end just so they don't take this down. But, yeah, that's how you join ISIS, buddy. Have a good one.
Now, is ISIS on TikTok yet?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Are they, actually?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we post them. As journalists, we spread them. We spread their videos.
That's true, but I mean, like, directly. Like,
yeah, I've seen, like, I haven't seen anything directly.
We fucking argue with ISIS on Twitter all the time. Like, I'm doing it very publicly. Like, they're there. Mostly the Taliban. Mostly I'm dunking
on
the Taliban.
My favorite ones are you dunking on the Taliban.
The cloud cache will be in various places. And the thing is that it's always being moved and created. And so this is the difference between ISIS and Al-Qaeda is that Al-Qaeda does things a lot differently on the media end than ISIS does. And the cloud cache, it links you to their entire dark web network. And it tells you how to make weapons, everything. It tells you how to set up a cell, how to contact them, how to use them. Has everything that ISIS has ever made is backed up online, hosted on the dark web, and we can't get rid of it. We do, as much as we try to hunt it down, it just needs to be sourced on a USB and it's re-uploaded somewhere else.
How broadcasted the war in Ukraine has been, right? Like, I mean, in a way, like, as long as the internet's been around, we've been able to find, like, heinous shit on it, you know? So,
yeah.
I mean, but now, like, it's just become, like, surfaced to, like, the mainstream. And that's because prior to Ukraine, and I would say even prior to Nagorno-Karabakh, most people weren't, and by most people, I mean, like, a very small percentage of people were actually actively looking for combat footage. Like,
in the regards to the West, yes.
Yeah.
When it comes to the jihadi networks, no. Al-Qaeda in Iraq had a very advanced media campaign, and that's who eventually did become ISIS. But even the insurgencies in Iraq, like the ISI.
I meant to say IAI. ISI is ISIS.
I think they were the good guys in the Iraq war until we killed them all. They made documentaries, and like
let me tell you about insurgencies in Iraq and media, buddy. They would used to show, like,
Al-Qaeda paid them for those tapes. If you killed somebody, they'd give you 100. If you got it on camera, they'd give you 300.
At cafes in Egypt, they used to show, like, Iraqi insurgents sniping, like, American soldiers.
Yeah,
like,
the sniper. So that sniper guy is famous, actually.
Like it was a Sports Center top 10.
Holy fuck.
Like, they were just showing it. They were like, hey, check out what our guys are doing over there. Like, they were showing it like it was like, I mean, on the one hand, you kind of get it because everyone was so pissed. I mean, I feel like I've told this story before, but apparently back in the day in Egypt, there used to be these like magazines you could get that kind of covered like, and I think you could get them in other Arab countries as well, but they kind of covered like,
yeah, the jihadis had zines.
Yeah, what the jihadis were doing in other countries. And on the back, there were like these tickets you could pull out where you would call a phone number. And if you were interested in joining, they would like hook it up. They would get you a bus to like Bosnia or like Afghanistan or like Tajikistan or Iraq or wherever, whatever was popping at the time. And yeah, that was like a thing back then.
But this guy, this sniper in Iraq, like, these are comics made about him. There's actually, so in the American Sniper movie, the enemy sniper he's fighting is this guy. in the John Cena movie, The Wall, the sniper that's targeting him is this guy. This is a real sniper that Ace is talking about that they would show in the cafes. He made tapes of killing people in Iraq. It's the most, it's some of the most famous war footage of all time. It was so viral back in the day, but it wasn't viral in the West. But they're literally called like Sniper 3, Sniper 4. But
I think I've seen a few of them.
Iraq has actually made a movie about him. But the thing is we're not sure if it's an individual person or something like that. It might be like multiple people who like have made the tapes and things like that. But
he's definitely a real person.
But their whole goal was to get everyone out, Al-Qaeda, Iran, and America. They wanted them all gone and out of the country. And they weren't Islamists
They were so based.
Yeah, they were not Islamists at all. They were all Muslim, but none of them were Islamists. And then we went in and started shooting them because they wanted their kids to go to school. Ironic. And that's how Fallujah happened. Anyway.
Hold on.
Let's get it wrapping up.
It's not this guy, is it?
No. It's Juba. This guy is this guy's in Syria, I think, right? No. This guy Iraqi. This guy's PMF. This guy's PMF.
That's right. Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's Shia.
Yeah, it's a pretty wild story if you don't know it. It's fucking it's wild.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who fought in every war since
he was just like a farmer, and he's like, "Fuck it, I'm gonna be a sniper now."
What about that Chechen dude that was in Syria?
He's the only based member of the PMF.
Omar al-Shashani, my best friend.
Is that his name? The Omar dude that was fighting Assad, and then Ukraine brought his unit over.
Oh no! Oh, that's so. Ace and I want to write an article about that guy. That guy's based as fuck.
Yeah, you know that one picture of him with like a bird or something.
Yeah. No, I got it right here actually.
With a bird.
No, I got it right here.
that picture was hard.
I got our draft right here.
Yep, that pick.
He's also not an Islamist. He's a jihadi, non-Islamist jihadi.
Is that how that works?
Mm-hmm. No. But it's true.
Very much work like that if you want.
Because he's never pledged loyalty to Al-Qaeda or anyone. All the other Chechens who were there, so like the two other guys who were like, he was one of the big three that were left. The other two are dead. But Turkey might be lying about one.
Oh, is that guy? Is that the only one of the big three that's left? Is that him?
Yeah.
He's
in Ukraine now.
Yes, he is.
Along with, like, what was it, 400 dudes?
Well, he had a small unit, but he had a strike team. Yeah, he always had a strike team, and he fought Russia back in the Caucasus Wars as well. Nice. So he was part of, when the Caucasus Emirate pledged loyalty to Daesh, he left. So he's like a strike team within the Chechen terrorist network. And he left. He might have been in custody in Turkey. He might be under protective custody in Turkey, but he's in Ukraine now, and we don't know what he's doing there. But there's a lot of potential for this guy to be like a future leader of Chechnya. If anyone is going to take down,
if he survives, the regime.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that he's a commander. So like he's very smart. He's very good, and where he fights in Syria is actually the woodland area of Syria. So that's the only place that his unit would fight. So he fights in a very specific scenario because that's
very Ukraine-like.
Yeah. So exactly, and that's where he probably is like in those types of situations in Ukraine.
Well, that's the thing though, that I feel like that's only specific parts of Ukraine though. That,
and he's probably with the Georgian Legion.
Definitely, because you know that caucus, like
we've talked about them before, but I think I cut it out.
International brigades now fighting for Ukraine.
When we choose the soldier not to have radical views, not to come here to kill somebody, we need them to protect somebody, not to kill somebody.
Some of the people who come are adventurers.
We don't accept adventurers. We don't accept, Nazis, racists, or.
Do you reject?
Of course. We rejected a lot of people.
A lot.
I mean, I would say we rejected more than 70% of who applied to Georgian Legion.
Back on the mission, Misha and his team prepare to strike, assembling a mortar behind an abandoned house. a hit-and-run deployment, they worked at speed, trying to avoid detection by the Russians.
I was trying to learn the alternative way, but it doesn't work with Russia, so it becomes senseless. So there was not agreement that Russia has not broken. So naturally, we have to fight. The only language Russia understands is the sound of a bullet.
And then
how long till Mossad assassinates you, though, is the real question.
It depends on if you're in Iran or not.
Yeah, bro, if you're in Iran, that shit is pronto.
Dude, I remember laughing because they said, like, a Terminator killed the nuclear scientist, and then turns out it was true. A Terminator did kill that nuclear scientist.
It's wild that they had, like, a dude, he lives, like, literally a kilometer from the, like, parliament building. Dude is walking out of his apartment, and some dudes on motorcycles just ice his ass.
Yeah, they use motorcycles a lot. They killed, like, an Al-Qaeda number 3 on a, just by using a motorcycle. But also, another guy that they failed an assassination attempt on one nuclear scientist. They drove up on motorcycles and stuck a bomb to his door.
What the fuck?
And blew it up, and the guy survived.
I feel like it would have just been easier to wait for him to walk outside and shoot him. Like, that's like when a basketball player should just go for a layup, but he tries to dunk it and just, like, hits it off the rim, like. You should have just went for the layup there. Just wait for him to walk outside and shoot. No one's going to stop you. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, but what's interesting to me, though, is that, like, we haven't seen, like, much use in the way of, like, autonomous weapon systems in Ukraine up until recently, right?
Oh, so you're just wait for San Francisco. What I'm pulling up.
You right? Talk about drones and shit? Or like,
yeah, well, so, like, during Karabakh, right, you know, you had, like, I would consider the war in Artsakh to be, like, the proving grounds for the loitering munition.
Yes,
right?
I agree.
Right? And they were used to devastating effect, right? But they were autonomous, but, like, they weren't, like, fully autonomous, you know?
The thing with the war in Artsakh is, like, you got a couple factors that play into it. The first factor being is that Azerbaijan knew for a fact that, like, as far as drones and autonomous weapons were concerned, there was no chance that Armenia was matching them in that. The second thing is because of the geography that you just got so many mountains, it just makes more sense. I mean, Ukraine's kind of flat, so you can still land artillery and things like that. And if you got the artillery or the tanks, you might as well make use of it. But in, like, Nagorno-Karabakh, bro, it was like, okay, we have 2 pieces of artillery posted up on this mountain, and we've got a 50-50 shot of hitting the guys on the other side of this mountain. But we have a drone, so we could just call that in instead and just, you know, turn the guys on that other side of the mountain into mincemeat. So might as well.
So this picture right here, this is that assassination, and this is the ballistic trajectory. You see that shit?
That's cool.
Just a machine gun.
Was this the one while the guy was driving down the highway in, like, Abadan or whatever the fuck, wherever the fuck it was?
Mm-hmm. And,
10,000 trajectories where it could have possibly gone.
Are we pulling up the Daily Mail now, boys?
Well, this is apparently the machine gun right here. This is apparently the machine gun right here, what it looks like. And it was on the back of just a pickup truck, I guess. A Nissan truck. It was just...
And this was Mossad?
Yes. Yes, it was their top nuclear scientist. But I think they responded. Like, they got pissed and they shot missiles somewhere or something. Or something stupid. They're always throwing a fit. Those little buggers.
You know, when Kanye was on like, Alex Jones' fucking show, and he was just talking about Netanyahu. Like, what the fuck, dude? Like, hate Netanyahu, right? Like, come on now.
Yeah, well, he's like, he doesn't even know who he is.
But Kanye just hates him because he's Jewish. Like, it's just blind anti-Semitism.
We can just call him a terrorist.
Who?
Netanyahu.
I mean,
because he wouldn't be the first prime minister who's a terrorist in Israel.
How many prime ministers has Israel had to this point? Yeah.
Menachem Begum and Sadat, both of them were terrorists. That peace accord was signed by two terrorists. It's just when Iran came, terrorism got a new definition.
Is that, I mean...
Menachem Begin was in a Israeli militia.
Yeah, he was a terrorist.
Yeah. Yeah, he was like, you could definitely say he was a terrorist. I mean, Sadat had been to prison twice. So, I mean, on one of them, I mean, it was like the 1940s. So they didn't really have a term for terrorism charges back then. But, like, mm-hmm. if he went to prison today, it would have been on terrorism charges.
Mm-hmm. Espionage. What'd you say? Espionage?
Espionage.
Espionage?
It's always espionage.
Yeah, espionage was one of the charges, yeah.
Now, can you really be considered, like, a state sponsor of terror if you are the state that is waging terror? Like, what is the classification at that point?
Yeah, you gotta sponsor terror to wage terror, baby.
What do you mean? That's what Iran is.
The American model.
Yeah, no, obviously Iran is definitely a state sponsor
like,
of terror.
Okay, right? I'm gonna come in with some shit.
But are you saying
right
like
now?
Israeli is fighting terrorism with terrorism?
We're having two
discussions. But like the thing with Iran is like, I'm not saying we should go to war with them. We shouldn't do that. But it is one of the things that neocons, and might be the only thing neocons are right about, is Iran being like a massive state sponsor of terror.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. That's like
that's the one thing that like a lot of crime. That's right.
But remember, right? That's also because Israel exists. But like, if we're being honest with ourselves,
monopoly. What you're doing right now is a meme in the Arab world. So. Oftentimes, there's a joke in the Arab world where it'll show like Hassan Nasrallah or like some Iranian official, and it'll be like, the road to Jerusalem is through Yemen. Now, mm-hmm. let me explain this joke, right? Basically, what is often said in Hezbollah and Iranian speeches is like, oh, we're going to liberate Jerusalem, this and that. But if you look at where they're geopolitically set up in Lebanon, they're geopolitically set up in Iraq, they're geopolitically set up in Yemen, because part of the Iranian doctrine is to, like, and this is why Khomeini kind of prolonged the war in Iraq, between Iraq and Iran,
yeah.
is to spread the revolution wherever you can. The revolution being, like,
they're not that much different than Al-Qaeda at this point.
Islamic revolution, right? So, basically... The joke is, they'll do anything but liberate Jerusalem. They'll fuck up Yemen. They'll fuck up Iraq. They'll fuck up Lebanon. And so on and so forth. They'll fuck up Syria. But they'll do anything but actually target Israel in Israel.
Iran has a terrorist network, and that's what makes them dangerous.
Yeah.
Iran is basically the head of the nexus. It's all connected with actors like Iran. Iran is extremely powerful in this regard because of the nexus. They may not have an air force or a navy. They have some patrol boats that they'll like suicide into you and like hijack you and shit like that. But Iran's threat is so much different because the thing is with the IRGC, it doesn't need the state at all. Mm-hmm. So if we go in there and we destroy Iran today, IRGC still exists. IRGC is still global.
Yeah. It'll still remain a terrorist network around the mm-hmm. world. Yeah,
it won't do a goddamn thing. It'll just get people killed.
That's interesting.
And this is where a lot of these weird leftists and liberals who forever for whatever reason think like Iran is some like harmless victim get confused. Like we've been saying, their terrorist network is massive.
It's because these people don't. This is not what the news reports. This is the problem.
They're arguably like the biggest factor to instability in the region.
Oh, 100%.